This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Mark Dreyfus is the Shadow Attorney General, and Mark makes a welcome return to SatMag. It's been a while since we spoke to you. Mark, how's your Saturday going?
It's good. Lovely sunny day here in Melbourne.
It is. Oh, sunny, you might be stretching it a bit, mate. It's certainly, it's not raining.
Sunny for Melbourne.
Let's look on the positive side.
Exactly. Look, there's a couple of things we wanted to talk to you about. The first is the government's flagged its intention. They want to, cancel, or you might have the right term, the Medivac bill that was passed last year against their wishes, but democracy sometimes has unfortunate consequences. They want to repeal this legislation, don't they?
They do want to repeal this legislation, and it's a shameful thing. This is legislation that's working, put in place by Labor and the crossbench when the government briefly lost control of the House of Representatives, and it's proved to be a very good thing. And it's got to be, you've got to say it's petulant or spiteful behaviour by the incompetent Peter Dutton that is driving this, because it's a law that only applies to the people presently on Nauru or Manus. It can't ever apply to anyone in Australia. It can't apply to anyone in the future. And it's been working. It's bringing back to Australia very ill people who need medical treatment.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, you know, so it applies to a particular group of people in particular locations, and they had to be there before a certain date. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
So this isn't going to cause a conga line of boats coming here under the, you know, as some in the government would say, you know, this is a backdoor to Australia. If you weren't on Manus or Nauru as of a certain date, this bill doesn't apply to you.
That's right. And Mr. Morrison and Mr. Dutton both said ridiculous, terrifying things before the election. They reopened Christmas Island at a cost of millions of dollars. Some of your listeners might remember Mr. Morrison going to Christmas Island at a cost of many tens of thousands of dollars to hold a press conference for an hour and then get back on the VIP plane and come back to Australia, all to beat up people, to make people afraid of this legislation. Now, they should leave it in place. Since it was passed, some 90 people have come to Australia for medical treatment. They've all come either because of the decision of Mr. Dutton, under pressure of this legislation, or because the independent panel of doctors, which he appoints, by the way, under this Medivac law, told him that they had to come to Australia. It's only, as I say, petulance on the part of the government. If they were acting competently, if they were wanting this system to work, if they were actually taking care of the people who Australia is responsible for, that they would leave this law in place.
Mark, you shared a story in Parliament on Wednesday night regarding an Iranian family that I think illustrates why these kinds of laws matter. I understand some of the details of that are pretty shocking. But can you, outline some of the details of that, just because I think it helps contextualise the stakes here?
This is a particularly distressing story, which I read first in a judgment of the Federal Court of Australia ordering Mr. Dutton to bring this family, or what was left of this family, to Australia. I wish I could say it was the only such case, but it's not. But in this case, I read the story in the House of Representatives because I thought it was a particularly good example. What happened was that a family, an Iranian family consisting of an older woman, her adult son, the adult son's wife, and a younger son all ended up on Nauru as a result of having come to Australia by boat in 2013. In early 2018, the adult son committed suicide. The mother attempted to commit suicide. The wife went into a catatonic state, and the younger son became seriously psychiatrically ill. I've stripped out the really bad details. Mm. Five times the minister was written to, contacted and appealed to, and not once did he answer a single one of the emails or letters or appeals that were made, not just by the family themselves, but by lawyers in Australia and doctors in Australia on their behalf. It should not take, this is what I said in my speech in the Parliament, it should not take five appeals from a family in dire and distressing circumstances where it is absolutely obvious that they are not receiving the care that they need on Nauru and cannot because there are no appropriate psychiatric facilities on Nauru. It should not take five appeals for the minister to act, and he didn't act. He had to be ordered by the federal court judge to bring him to Australia. So that's the story I told. And if ever you wanted an example of why this Medivac law should not be repealed, that single case ought to be enough.
Didn't, before the election, Mark, didn't Peter Dutton say that this bill would effectively cause the collapse of the public health system?
Yes, and it's a nonsense. under no circumstances could it. We're a country of 26 million people. We have still in our care less than around 1,000 people on Nauru and Manus Island. The government has pretended for years that somehow they're in the custody of Nauru or the custody of Papua New Guinea, but successive federal court judges have ruled that they are Australia's responsibility. Even if every single one of them came to Australia tomorrow, that would not cause the collapse of Australia's health system, which is a health system that treats and cares for 26 million Australians. It's like so much of what Peter Dutton says. It's an absurdity. He and Mr. Morrison on a daily basis try to frighten Australians, try to pretend that things are much more serious than they actually are, and attribute all sorts of fake, dire consequences to quite simple propositions. In this case, a law has been passed by the Parliament, which they're now trying to repeal using the majority that they got at the election, and they shouldn't be repealing it.
Does that repeal have to pass the Senate, Mark?
It does. So the government has a majority in the House of Representatives over the opposition of Labor and the crossbench. The bill passed the House of Representatives last week. The Senate has sent the bill to a committee. This is the repeal bill. Mm-hmm. That committee won't be reporting until November, and then it's probably going to come down to a single vote. There's the two Centre Alliance senators, the Labor senators, the Greens Party senators have directly said they'll be voting against this repeal. The single additional vote that's needed is most likely to come from Senator Jackie Lambie. I'd encourage anyone listening to write to Senator Jackie Lambie because she might decide, having looked at the circumstances, I'll certainly be talking to her between now and then, that this law should not be repealed.
We've had Jackie on the show before, which was pretty interesting. But we'll...
I think your listeners, if they remember Jackie coming on, would know that she's a person with deep empathy who cares.
She does, yes.
And she's had some difficulties in the health system
herself,
both for herself and her family. I think she'll understand very well the need for this law to stay in place.
Yeah, I think the government will be able to count on the votes of one brain, otherwise known as One Nation. Well, they share one brain between them. Look, I think one of the challenges, Mark, is this whole national security, you know, wrapping it up in that, and it's the same as metadata. And we were speaking earlier to Alice Drury from the Human Rights Law Centre on metadata. I'm pretty concerned about this issue. I'm pretty concerned about its abuse. I'm pretty concerned about how it can be applied to everyone. I do not argue against the need for our security authorities to be able to know what's going on and to be able to target particular people and groups. But I'll be honest with you, I do not trust the government on this. I don't trust the security authorities. And I'm sorry to say, I'm not entirely sure that I trust the Labor Party. I think this issue is a basic human right, and it comes to the question, what price do we have to pay to feel secure? And how is this making us more secure when things that are happening, whether it's the Australian Federal Police, whether it's the ACT Police, I think the seesaw's a bit, you know, I think the balance here is a bit off centre. Can you reassure me that it's not?
I hope I can reassure you about the Labor Party's orientation on this. We accept that there's a need to keep Australians safe in the physical sense that we have national security for, but at all times we think there's a balance to be struck in relation to looking after Australians' rights and freedoms. Now, regrettably, the minister who's now responsible, I'm going after Peter Dutton again, but he's put himself in charge of the whole of national security, having moved ASIO and the Australian Federal Police into this mega department that he now sits on top of. It's not apparent to me that he understands the need for balance or that the Liberal government understands the need for balance. I'm pleased that the Liberals were not able to abolish the Office of the Independent National Security Legislation Monitor, something we set up in government. They tried to abolish that office in 2014 and failed. And since then, the Independent National Security Legislation Monitor has made a number of reports that have suggested change to our national security laws. I've worked very hard in the Parliament to make sure that there are safeguards and sunsetting and a whole range of other measures that are included in national security laws since the Liberals in 2014 decided they would start on a what's been a, now I think we're up to the 17th national security bill since August 2014. That's the effort we can make from opposition. But I'm sorry to tell your listeners that Labor didn't get elected at the last election to govern.
No shit.
Yeah, there's a limit to how much we can restrain a government when we don't have the numbers, a majority in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, Mark, this is Toby. I should say I respect Macca's view. I'm a proud member of the Labor Party, and you know, I know that you've worked hard on a number of these issues. Is part of the solution to a number of these challenges perhaps a Bill of Rights? Is that something that might help to, say, restrain people like Peter Dutton when they wind up being in positions of power and the future Duttons down the line?
I think that the fact that people are continuing to talk about whether or not we need at the national level a Charter of Rights or a Bill of Rights tells you something. It tells you that people have noticed that in Victoria we've got a Charter of Rights, in the ACT we've got a Charter of Rights, and just last year Queensland introduced a Charter of Rights. That tells you that potentially there's some use for these charters, and because what they do is give a framework for considering individual issues. But it's Parliament and the country agreeing in advance that these are the principles that are going to apply. At the last election, sorry to hark back, we went to the election with a commitment to review Australia's national human rights framework. I think that call that you've just expressed, saying should we have a national Bill of Rights or a national Charter of Rights, isn't going to go away because we continue to see pretty awkward discussions, pretty awkward debates about human rights issues, which, speaking personally, it's not Labor Party policy at the moment that we go directly to a Charter of Rights, but speaking for myself, I can see that there's a real use in having a charter because it gives you a framework. It means you're not just having a political arm wrestle every time a human rights issue comes up.
Thanks for that, Mark. I, you know, appreciate you putting the view. I remain unconvinced, but probably a few percent less unconvinced than I was. But I watch this issue very carefully, and I do, I do understand. You know, you're not the government. There's very little, you know, that you're actually able to achieve when you don't have the numbers. But talking about it and advocating for it is really, really important. We have run out of time, unfortunately, but, you know, as we've said before, you're very welcome to come on and talk about these issues. Our listeners like hearing all the sides of the argument. So thank you for your time, and I hope your Saturday pans out pretty good.
And you too. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.